Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Impromptu podcast with Ethan Sherwood-Strauss. How's it going?
It's going great. It's beautiful outside. I just got back from Warriors practice. Let's talk some basketball.
You went to Warriors practice? I don't see you as a practice guy.
I usually do not like it. There isn't a whole lot you can get, and it's boring. I know some people love to show up there, and they'll look like a noob. They'll be video recording Curry shooting threes, and oh my god, Curry shooting threes. And yeah, you can also see that, you know, before basketball games, he shoots threes, he practices them.
It's cool to see that players practice.
Yeah. It's okay. It's pretty cool, I guess. I don't hate watching it. It's better background to my life than, say, watching a fish tank. I don't know why I threw a fish tank in there, but, you know.
I'm anti-fish tank.
You're anti-fish tank, eh?
They're way more complicated than you would think they are.
I'm just against taking care of things that don't care if you live or die. You know, and I feel that way about snakes. Why have a snake? It doesn't care if you live or die.
Right.
Why have it?
No, I'm more pro snake than I am pro aquarium. Like, I just feel like an aquarium you go to and you spend money on. I'm all for those. Like, those are great. Mm-hmm. You see sea otters. Sea otters are amazing.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Like an aquarium, a home aquarium that you take care of, I'm not into it. It's too much. You have to know like pH balances, and there have to be like the correct kind of plants and rocks and food and all this crap, and one fish can eat another, and it's just that it's too much work. Like, you're supposed to just have a tranquil thing. Like, you're better off buying a TV, like a big screen TV, putting it on the wall and just setting like it to some kind of fish video.
I completely agree with you on this one. And it's also smelly. Fish food is smelly. There's just smells going on that you don't really want. The snake, though, I don't get these people who get an anaconda or boa constrictor, and then it eats the human inevitably, and they win a Darwin Award, and it's just, why would you have something that would just kill you and not think twice about it? I might be a little biased because I once got bit by a snake on the temple.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of my fault. I was a kid. In the fourth grade at my aftercare, and we had pythons, and so I kept thinking it was funny to toss a python in my friend's gym bag, you know? And that was very amusing to me. He reaches in the gym bag, ah, it's a python! And
he could have been seriously injured. That's a psychopathic thing to do.
I wasn't really thinking about the consequences around that time. one of these days, I get the snake out. I'm planning my whole python prank, you know, my classic hilarious python prank. And instead, the snake bites me in the temple and starts trying to wrap around my neck.
Oh, my God.
And I managed to fling the snake off of me, and I just had this bloody temple from the python trying to get me. And they told me that his eyes were milky because he was shedding, so he just thought I was a big old mouse. I don't believe that. I think the snake rightfully looked at me and said, I'm sick of this. Stop.
I know snakes have tiny brains, but there's no way it mistook you for a mouse. They know how big mice are.
Their vision gets really bad when they're shedding, so that's the explanation for why I was attacked.
I
don't think it was retribution.
I would imagine they still have a Buster Bluth-like vision ability where they seem like points and shapes and size. Like, it's not like their depth perception becomes screwed up, right? It's just a matter of like it's blurry.
Maybe it was just a really ambitious snake and he thought, I could take this mouse, this giant mouse, I could do it, you know? And like, then how much food would I have? So much food.
That's true. We should talk about some news and notes, which are brought to you by squarespace.com.
Ooh.
Phil Jackson introduced as the president of the Knicks, 5 years, $60 million. A fun press conference today. If you were on Twitter, James Dolan admitted that he's not a basketball expert. He had some really awkward jokes about how he had discussed with Phil that if they're up by 30 or something like that, he would get in the game. And Phil, you know, talked about how Carmelo Anthony is a part of their plan, and which I know you don't like.
Oh, come on. Already with the straw manning. Already with it. Come on.
It's not a straw man. You don't think Carmelo Anthony's good?
I think he's good. I just wonder. It's funny that he's become the focus of so much so often, where it's all about what are we going to do to placate Melo, not placate him, but what are we going to do to serve him to make sure he doesn't leave? We're now on our second team where we're doing that, and he's essentially this generation's Dominique Wilkins. I know somebody's going to look at their basketball reference and go, that comparison is wrong because this and that. I'm just saying that he's a good scorer, a decent player, but it would seem through some sort of accident of history that he's become too much of a focus. That's all I'm saying.
Disagree. He's a fantastic player. He's one of the best players in the world. One of the best players in the league. He's one of the best players in the league. And the guys who are the best players in the league who are also in big markets tend to get covered quite a bit. And they should try to build it. Like, I think you can build a championship team around Melo. You have to be very smart about it, and you can't miss on stuff. But you, like, that's, we saw Dirk Nowitzki win it. And not that Melo is better than Dirk, but Dirk was a power forward who could score, who wasn't a good defender, and didn't rebound. And they made it work. Like, I don't think that this is that far off, that of a score-first guy who doesn't give you that much in any other areas. You know, he's not as good as Dirk was, but he's not bad. He's one of the best scorers in the league.
Well, I actually feel better about it now than in the past when he was playing a lot of small forward and his numbers weren't as great. Now he's a more efficient player, so it makes more sense that you could build a really great offense around Carmelo Anthony. I just also find it amusing that it's all about Melo, 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 and there is an element of what has this guy done. So that's all I'm saying. I get it. And
What has this guy done? What does that even mean?
He's a terrible player in the playoffs. Are we allowed to talk about that? How he continually plays awfully in the postseason, and it's not exactly random small sample size because he shoots a bunch, and that makes him less efficient. So I don't get why there's so much focus on someone like LeBron James failing in the playoffs when he does fail in the playoffs. But with Carmelo Anthony, we're not really talking about this. That's all I'm saying.
He's terrible?
I would say he's not good. I would say that he has been a playoff blight of late.
He's had six postseasons in which he had an over 20 PER.
Let's look at this. And I would also add that PER is influenced by the amount that you shoot, so
has a fantastic in the year they went to the conference finals. He had a fantastic win shares per 48 as well.
Zach, how does this always happen when we end up arguing and then we go to Playoff Basketball Reference about somebody? I feel like this has happened at least 80 times on your podcast.
I think we could avoid it if you just stop being wrong.
I am not wrong on this, sir. His true shooting percentage in the last postseasons, 497, 489, 505 for the last three with the Knicks.
Yeah, okay. He faced the Pacers, right? True. They made him be terrible, and which they do. And last year,
LeBron shot great against them, by the way, last season. Just saying.
Well, LeBron's a better player than him.
Just saying.
This is the problem. You just got to the crux of the issue. Is we want him to be LeBron James, and because
what
he's
you even
no. You know this is correct. More so than we want him to be Kevin Durant, we want Carmelo to be LeBron James because they came into the league together. It's more symmetrical. It's a cooler story. They were supposed to be Bird and Magic, and instead it's just been LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. And because Melo hasn't lived up to that hype, we have deemed him a failure when, in fact, he is quite a great player. He's just not as good as LeBron. He's not even close to the player LeBron is, so we think that he is not a real superstar, which is crazy to me.
I think it's fair to say he's not a real superstar because defense matters. Defense matters. He's a bad defensive player, and he doesn't pass especially well. So you have somebody who is rather efficient offensively, but he's not a good passer, and he's bad at defense. That adds up to perhaps a pretty good player, but not exactly somebody who guarantees you a playoff slot when surrounded just with average talent, if that's how we're defining superstar. And I've never really understood that definition of superstar, because as we pointed out before, there's a massive difference in making the playoffs in one conference versus the other, so that's a little unfair to Kevin Love. And now I'm rambling.
See, it's a constant contradiction.
A constant contradiction.
Yeah, that's what
it's
I'm
a great
saying.
Album title.
maybe that's JD in the Straight Shots next title.
I love how doesn't he look like a hobbit to you, but sort of a shrugging hobbit.
I tweeted this today. I started tweeting it and realized I lost my point, but I just watching James Dolan, like I it was like watching a non funny, non addicted Artie Lang.
Oh God. That's pretty funny.
Like that was the sense I got. It was just like, wow, if Artie Lang wasn't funny and he wasn't a heroin addict, like this is what it would be. It would just be this bumbling, like kind of schlubby guy with a lot of money just up there talking.
Yeah, and I hate nepotism, but it produces hilarious results, because there's no way that somebody like this ends up running a basketball team without it, you know? No way that somebody this out of place and this awkward ends up in that position of power where he has to deal with the massive Phil Jackson filled with gravitas.
If you think about it, he's the Maloofs all in one person, only it's impossible to fail financially as the Knicks owner.
Yes. And we just don't really have a good system set up for dealing with this, because parents ultimately want to reward their children with basketball teams, and sometimes the right kid doesn't get the team, and sometimes there isn't a right kid to get the team. And then sometimes you have an interesting situation like with the Lakers, where there's a power battle amongst the children for the team. So it's a fun disaster to watch when the nepotism wreaks havoc on a franchise and the millions of people who might be a fan of that franchise.
Phil Jackson talked about how he talked about like his seven principles of offense and how they will be a part of the, you know, kind of the part of the focus of.
Did he wrap it like Biggie with the 10 crack commandments?
No, he did not. He didn't really share all of them with us. It was essentially like, you know, share the ball, move, be smart. You know, it was a lot of the basics. But and how, you know, they wouldn't necessarily run the triangle, but they will, you know, implement those principles. And
I like how he's not getting high on his own supply of the triangle.
Continue. Yeah, it does make me wonder. It makes me wonder who this next coach is going to be.
Yeah, I think that represents progress if he's going away from the triangle, because it seems as though that hasn't worked out anywhere.
wouldn't the ideal thing be to bring, I mean, I don't think he'd do it, but to bring Stan Van Gundy, like just give him $10 million a year.
But Stan Van Gundy's ideal spot is just that's New Orleans. That's the ideal SVG spot. That's what I see happening right there.
Sure.
I don't want anything to screw that up. Not that I'm rooting for Monty to get fired. I just,
why not? He's been terrible.
Yeah, it's an inevitability.
I mean, I don't feel right about wanting guys to lose their jobs, but I mean, he's been awful.
Yeah, the SVG thing with Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis, that seems like the ideal Van Gundy team. So yeah. That makes sense. You know, Miles Brown, and we've mentioned him before on the podcast, had a good point that doesn't it say something that the Bulls and Lakers made absolutely no effort to offer Jackson a front office job even after all the success? So that's some ominous foreshadowing, wouldn't
well,
you think?
Well, the Bulls I get, because there was a whole falling – not a falling out, but there was a power struggle there. And the same guy's there with Jerry Reinsdorf, and he's not – I don't find him – he's a weird guy.
Yeah.
Reinsdorf's like a weird power guy. And then the Lakers make sense because Jim Buss is – I don't know, he's mad that Jeannie Buss is dating Phil, or – I mean that was a weird power struggle too. But if you're willing to give Phil the power, I think he'd go anywhere. I mean, that's kind of why he was rumored to be like the Seattle president, right?
Yeah. He certainly seems bored and like he just wants a situation.
Yeah, and then there's the whole like cyclical thing to his career going back to New York. I'm actually happy. I'm excited for this because I want the Knicks to be good and relevant in a good way. I think it's much better for the league if they are.
We're winners either way. I mean, Phil Jackson's a compelling personality. He's an interesting guy. So if it's a failure, I'm intrigued. And if it's a success, that's great as well. So I believe that the fans win, the casual observers win, the people like us who just need something to talk about certainly win. So I'm happy that it's happening. I don't necessarily think that things are going to work out just because we have that shrugging hobbit, you know, sober already laying running things, but I'm interested.
Well, that's kind of unfair because Artie Lang is sober now.
Yes.
So maybe sober Artie Lang 2.0.
You get what you we understand what you mean. Okay. You know,
I don't want to.
Sloppy Artie Lang is more of an archetype than sober Artie Lang.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't want to dismiss Artie Lang's soberness. No, yeah, not yeah. Soberness isn't a word. Sobriety is what I meant.
Congrats, Artie Lang. Stay safe. You know, keep up the good fight. We're pulling for you.
Absolutely. What else were we going to talk about? I can't remember. I know you wanted to talk some Warriors, but I feel like there was something else. I feel like we should save Warriors for the second half of the podcast.
Sure. Oh, there's the whole tanking debate has gotten stirred up again because Zach Lowe wrote about the wheel and how the Philadelphia 76ers are kind of forcing the hand of the league to deal with this situation right after Adam Silver at the Sloan Conference said that there's no evidence that anybody has ever tanked games. So That's interesting. What's your take on all that?
He can't say that teams are tanking.
Sure.
I mean,
but
that's just
can also not go the other way and insult everybody's intelligence and say that there's no evidence that's ever happened. He can evade without being disingenuous.
No, because nobody would let him do that in today's environment.
Oh, they would. They would.
Who? You'd have people like you calling him out on every little, you know, misstep as he's trying to evade.
I don't think that there's much calling out of commissioners. I believe that the media response to a lot of commissioning is sycophantic unless they really screw up. So I think that he didn't have to go that extra step and make these bold proclamations of there's no evidence that this ever happened at a conference in which a former GM then said we were trying to lose basketball games and we were trying to tank. That part was
nuts. that is a little. Well, I think he can compartmentalize it of players on the court are never tanking, coaches are never tanking.
He's redefining it.
He's
really,
which is true, which I believe is absolutely true, and you do too, right?
Yeah, I think so too. For the most part, players don't care about the team's goals, but he's defining it semantically as the players aren't throwing the game. But I think it's more commonly understood that these organizations are trying to trip up their players, which in some ways is almost worse and more dysfunctional than the situation where everyone's on the same page and trying to lose.
Only if they keep those players around. Like, you know, Charles Jenkins wasn't trying to tank any games, but the Warriors were.
Yes.
But if they had kept Charles Jenkins past that point, that would have been kind of messed up. Or would it have been a reward?
I don't know. And you know what? And I had some hopes for Jenkins, and I'm a little saddened that that he might not ever be back in the league.
I think it's mostly a talent issue.
Yes. Yeah. He kind of wasn't providing a whole lot with the whole my specialty is the foot on the line 3-pointer that's a 2-pointer. That's kind of a problem.
that's usually not a great weapon.
I'm great at the most needless thing. That's an issue.
So the wheel, it's weird because Zach Lowe initially like had the wheel post, right? Like a few months ago. And then immediately people who didn't break the news kind of seemed to be like, oh, this is never going to happen. Like people aren't taking this seriously. Which I thought was weird, but now like Zach Lowe's back again with it. I do wonder. It makes me wonder how realistic of a possibility it is. I really think implementing it is tricky. Like the players have never really had a say in changes to the draft lottery, but wouldn't they have to? Wouldn't they have to be brought in if they were going to go to this extreme?
Yeah, well, they don't have much of a say because they don't want to have much of a say because they represent the active players and the incoming class of players is only a concern to them insofar as it can take jobs away from them.
Right.
So I think they'd have to have some input, but maybe not a whole lot. I would just bet on inertia. I would bet on it not happening because it's this big, bold, dramatic change. And so I also believe what Zach's writing, that there's movement on it and there's interest in it. I mean, why wouldn't I believe that? What's Zach's incentive to lie to us? That wouldn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, no. I don't. It's not about Zach lying. It would be more of whoever is feeding him.
Yeah,
these ideas lying to get it out there, but I don't. I mean, I don't think that's happening either. I do think there's interest. I just wonder how realistic the interest is.
But I think that you touched on something that's an interesting subject, which is that people were perhaps reluctant to admit that it was real because they weren't the ones breaking the news or bringing it up, and that this is a whole drag on innovation when it comes to the NBA. Is that people get jealous and they won't admit that they're jealous, but they just try to shoot down whatever idea comes up because it's not their idea. And that does seem to be a drag on moving forward. And it's also easier to criticize, and social media makes it easy to criticize. It's much easier to criticize than it is to come up with solutions. And then there's this whole connected topic right now, which is that there's a whole contingent of at least basketball Twitter and maybe people connected to it who don't want to admit that there is a problem. You know, there is an issue here. There's an issue.
Are there people that think there isn't? Well, I don't. Oh. All right, I don't know. I don't know if it's a problem necessarily. I think it's an aspect that people don't like, but I wonder how big of a problem it actually is in that kind of meaning of the word. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, we're never gonna know completely. What we do know is this. What we do know is that ratings for the NBA have been down recently, and the other sports ratings have been going up. Now, that might have nothing to do with the situation. It might have something to do with totally other situations. But the health of the league is flagging a bit, and I don't see that discussed so much in our realm, but it is an issue, and the NBA should perhaps look to solutions. And as far as this particular issue, the tanking issue, I read a few things. I see a few different counter arguments to it being an issue, which is, I like tanking. It gives teams a chance. My response to that would be this. Well, if people like it so much, then why don't people show up to the games of the teams that are tanking? Why doesn't the attendance at Sixers games reflect some goodwill for this approach? Obviously, if people like it, they don't like it enough to vote with their feet and vote with their wallet. So I don't find that to be a compelling counter argument. And I also hear, well, fans don't hate tanking. This is all a media-driven issue. That seems to be a bit of a distraction to me. A, we don't exactly know what fans quote-unquote hate. B, this is more about getting people interested. And if people look at your league and see a bunch of loserness, and that's the topic and teams want to lose, they might not hate that. They just might be apathetic towards it, and they might just choose to do something else. I just don't think it's a good look for the league. I don't think it's good to look at the PTI scroll, to look at – this is – kind of the mainstream sports America is looking at, to see Wilbon and Kornheiser talking about the 76ers trying to lose, making your league looking dysfunctional in between glowing hype and praise of the NCAA tournament. I just think that's a bad look, and the NBA should fix it. And it's crazy to me that there's so much resistance to just fixing a problem.
Yeah, right. I mean, part of that is, well, the whole like comparing to college, that's, I believe that's a lot of race-based criticism when people are so against NBA basketball but they love college basketball. Because
I'm not talking about that particular issue. I'm just throwing that out as an example of your league is getting negative press while other leagues are getting positive press because you have this weird absurdity of teams trying to fail, like in the producers. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, in terms of flagging ratings, like I would say that's all injury driven. Which I actually did. You listen to the BS report? I know I'm supposed to pretend that ESPN doesn't exist, but did you listen to the BS report?
Don't you mean the CBS report, Zach?
Did you listen to the CBS report with George Gervin?
I did listen to that. Yes,
he had an interesting point on there where he said like he thought guys were getting injured because they didn't know, because they were off balance when they were doing stuff, when they were making moves and stuff, and that they didn't know how to fall and stuff. I thought that was a fascinating take on it.
Yeah, I just think it's probably more a result of bigger, faster, stronger.
I mean, me personally, like people have asked, why do you think guys are injured so much? And I honestly think that guys are in too good of shape.
Yeah,
they're too tightly wound in terms of tendons and ligaments and muscles, and it's just a time bomb.
They're pushing themselves to the extremes of what a human body can do.
Yeah, so, when's the last time Boris Diaw had an injury?
Never. He's got blubber that cushions his fall.
Right. Exactly.
He bounces right back up off the floor.
He's wearing his own bubble wrap suit.
He's a memory foam mattress and a basketball player all at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
that memory foam mattress commercial, that Dos Equis commercial, it makes no sense to me.
I don't like memory foam stuff.
You know, I'm okay with it. I just don't get the insinuation of the Dos Equis guy that it somehow remembers your escapades in the bedroom. That's a little weird to me. What's the big fear? That you're going to wake up and the mattress is going to look at you and tell you what you did? It's a bizarre commercial.
I got to be honest. I'm out on the Dos Equis guy.
You're out on him.
I'm out. I'm done with him.
I think that he advertises during ESPN games, so I can't say that I agree with you, but I do respect your take.
It's possible he advertises during CBS stuff, but I like Dos Equis. It's a beautiful beer if they sponsor CBS products, but I'm out on the Dos Equis guy. I just think it's it just looks like Wolf Blitzer is doing this stuff. And I don't believe Wolf Blitzer can do any of this. I don't think he can go rock climbing.
Yeah, he's kind of fighting. A leather-skinned Wolf Blitzer. I just think they've gotten a little lazy with some of the advertisements. His thank you notes have resulted in your welcome notes. Well, so has my very polite aunts. I don't really get that one. It's not that great. It's not that impressive.
No.
I don't want them scolding people too on how to live their lives and how you shouldn't use this kind of pickup line or that kind of pickup line. I didn't like when he became a scold. You know, I didn't like that.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't mind hearing about how he lives his life. Don't tell me how to live mine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Get out of here with that. Yeah, you know? That's taken a little too far.
There's too many humble brags with this Dos Equis guy.
Yes, and he's surrounded by women like a weird, wrinkly Hugh Hefner. Yeah, it's gotten weird. I don't know about it.
Speaking of awful things, the Sixers, I'm amazed that the Sixers have a ticket over $30 at this point.
Is that courtside?
That would be starting shooting guard. Should be $30.
Starting shooting guard?
Yeah, you sell three of them for each game, and that guy gets to go out there. Or girl. Gets to go out
there.
That
would be amazing. That would be such a better use of this end of the season. Because I've always wanted to see a regular person on an NBA basketball court with NBA players.
Talk about Charles Jenkins?
Yeah.
I don't even know why I'm taking shots at him. He's a perfectly nice guy. I'm sure.
He's a bowling ball. I had such high hopes for him.
Yeah. The easiest way is just to unweight the lottery, I feel like.
Yeah.
The wheel would be interesting.
The only issue we agree on, Zach. The only issue we agree on is this issue.
The wheel would be interesting, but I don't like the league. There's the idea of like the play-in tournament or the end of season tournament or the All-Star break tournament or all this stuff. The wheel, like, I don't want the NBA to be gimmicky.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best sport in the world, in my opinion, and I think that it's even if it isn't the most popular one, I just think it's the best product, and I don't think you need to make it a gimmicky thing year in, year out.
I like just weighting the lottery less, and if your argument is that teams might tank out of the playoffs, then give more money just to make sure. I don't think they will because there's playoff money that you get. So maybe up the money a little bit for making the playoffs, unweight the lottery. It doesn't have to be.
There's not a single team that is going to miss the playoffs on purpose.
I don't think so, but maybe just in case. That seems to me to be a simple solution because here's my issue with tanking. And I think we get distracted with this whole, does it exist? Are teams tanking? What is tanking? That's a sideshow as far as I'm concerned. The reason I don't like it is that as a fan, I don't like having a murky purpose. I don't like rooting against my team or not knowing if I'm supposed to root against my team. I prefer to, in every game, want my team to win and enjoy the small victories when they do. I don't like the idea of as a fan, having my fandom dampened by sometimes wanting failure.
I feel like you had a pretty good time in 2011, 2012.
Oh, no, I did not, and I have written about this. I thought it was bad. Also, I wasn't quite a fan. You know, even though what's ironic is that I'm a fan tonight, as I proclaimed that I'm not a fan. I'm not going as media tonight to the Magic Warriors game. I am going. I bought a ticket.
Wow.
I'm actually showing up in the crowd.
Courtside?
Yeah, courtside. No, lower bowl.
Oh,
you know,
look at
you! Don't
you
want those upper bowl tickets? Like, no. What's even the point? Then you're just wasting your money, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
But basically, Allie doesn't know anything about basketball, but she's intrigued by bobbleheads. Like all casual fans and non-sports fans, bobbleheads are somehow just this hypnotic device that makes people go crazy. So she wants to go to this game. So we're going to this game.
A hypnotic device for me would be Squarespace.com.
Boom.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. I would assume that if you have Squarespace, you're acting like a bobblehead right now and just nodding in agreement to everything I'm saying about Squarespace.
That's right.
Because it's your hype man skills are... This is much better than last time. Constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, even better support. Beautiful designs for you to start with. All the style options you could possibly want to create a unique website for you, your business, whatever kind of website you're creating, either for your own personal use or for your business. It's going to look great with Squarespace.
Tell them, Zach.
It's incredibly easy to use as well. Support team is 24/7, 100 employees or more in New York. Care Bear Lair is their support team, and they just... No matter what's going on, Ethan, let's say you screwed something up and you deleted your entire website.
Oh, no.
Call them. Call them and say, hey, I need help with this, and they'll fix it for you.
Boom shakalaka.
Exactly. And it's incredibly cheap. $8 a month. You're going to get a free domain name. There's not many things you can buy. I bought gas the other day for my car, and I wanted a car wash because my car was filthy. I had to pay extra for the car wash. Ooh. I feel like the Squarespace has kind of clouded me with how reality is, because they're just giving free stuff, like a free domain name when you sign up for a year. And it's much cheaper than when I got gas.
Good deal. I'm running out of hype man things to say.
Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience, matches overall style of your website. Content's going to look great no matter where you look at it, on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, no matter where. The big screens in Times Square, everywhere. It's going to look fantastic. You can start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. If you decide to sign up for Squarespace, go to squarespace.com/CBS Sports. You're going to put in the offer code FUN. That's F-U-N. It's going to get you another 10% off. Show your support for the Ion Basketball Podcast, which thanks Squarespace for their support. And Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Get them.
Speaking of the Warriors, you still hate David Lee. And maybe other people do too.
I believe that the fan base is somewhat divided on this topic. And
it's weird because he's good.
I'm moving aside from that.
No. You can absolutely admit he's a good basketball player, while not wanting him on your team.
Sure, I guess one could say that.
He's one of the best scoring power forwards in the league.
Yes.
And he's one of the best rebounding power forwards in the league. Or one of the best rebounders in the league, period.
Look, I would say that this is the David Lee issue is a point on which reasonable people can disagree, and that's why there are two sides of it. Plus Minus loves David Lee. And so there's a good argument for saying that we need more David Lee. But let's just set up the backdrop for this, which is that he got benched recently twice, most recently in the game against the Blazers, where the Warriors fell down quite a bit, and he was getting killed defensively by Jarrell Wright shooting threes over him. So he got benched. Draymond Green came in, and you don't usually see David Lee get benched. So it's an intriguing issue. There are a lot of components. There's a sense after the playoff run that, as we've discussed on this podcast, that the four out strategy is the optimal strategy for the Warriors, and David Lee doesn't really fit in that strategy. So it's this sense of they're good when he's on the court for the most part, but is that the optimal strategy that they need to use if they're going to get from wherever they are to actual contention? Because right now, when they bring up the teams that can contend in the West, the Warriors are off that list.
Yeah, I mean, I don't look at the Warriors. I don't like the way they play offense.
Yes.
Anymore. And so, because their offense, their style is so bad, or it's not bad, it's just away from what made them really good and really intriguing last year. And it's hard for me to look at what they're doing and think like, oh, they're just going to flip a switch when the playoffs come and go back to that. I mean, maybe they will because they'll feel desperate and they'll try more things to catch that momentum, and then they'll realize like, oh, right, this is good for us. We should do this. And they'll go back to that. But as of right now, like, I just watching them, I don't know how you could think they're actually a title contender.
Well, the Blazers game was interesting because it was a glimpse into what they did in the playoffs last season. And that was intriguing, which is so I'm an evangelist for going four out and sometimes even five out, four 3-point shooters around the perimeter in general. But with the Warriors, it makes especially a lot of sense because they have this unique weapon. They have this guy who's efficient off the dribble, off a high screen, just firing the three. And other teams don't have that. So four out, that's especially devastating. It's not really guardable. That situation is not guardable. So when you have high screen with Bogut, with Steph Curry, with the defenders pinned around the perimeter, it's so tough to guard, and it looked great in that Blazers game. And that's part of the reason why there is some anti-Lee sentiment. It's funny because the main criticism is of his defense, and Draymond Green is by no means thought of as an offensive player, but at least Draymond Green will shoot three-pointers and, if open, possibly make them. So he's intriguing offensively, and that's the thinking behind it, and the thinking that I'll just say I'm in the anti-David Lee camp. I'll just cop to that. You know, that's our thinking.
Oh, good, because I think everyone was confused on that issue.
Well, I figure I might as well own it. You know,
what's interesting is
to trade him. I obviously don't think that they're going places with him. I think it's awkward that they wildly exceeded expectations in the playoffs and then brought him back instead of dealing him. And I'm just going to have to stand by that. And maybe I'm wrong. I can't predict the future. Maybe he'll play great in the playoffs and he'll really help them. But this is what I believe.
What's interesting is he and Draymond Green almost have the exact same defensive rating on the court.
True.
But a lot of that is Lee plays with Bogut and yeah. Iguodala, right?
And Draymond Green was forced to play a bunch with Spates.
Yeah. Is he still a thing? Do they still
he's been buried on the bench.
Okay, that's for the best, right?
Yeah, it's well for the team, not for our entertainment.
No, I still love that, like, I talked crap about him one game, and then he hit a half-court shot at the end of a quarter, and people are like, oh, what now? I'm like, really? That random act of success made you think, like, that was a time to...
Well, people are always just looking to what now, yeah. That happens just because it's...
Yeah, the what now is not quite the well actually, but the what now is up there.
Yeah, the what now is up there with the well actually... They are both forces for just trying to assert their intellectual dominance over you, over social media.
Do you hate good offense, though? Because they're very good on offense with him on the court.
Yeah, I would also argue that he is a good offensive player, but it's hard to get him in a situation where it's the optimal situation for what you want. So when you play him at center, that's so great for your offense, because he is great at slipping screens and pick and roll, just like he did with the Knicks. But you don't want to play him at center. That's not really what you want. So you almost need an ideal situation where it's him and Bogut and Iguodala and Klay Thompson and Curry, the starting lineup. But the other lineups that you could use with it don't really make a whole lot of sense. And the way I'd like to see David Lee get used, if he's going to be on this team, would be to head up some of these bench units that struggle offensively. That makes more sense to me because I don't think, unlike the other players who really benefit from Steph Curry setting them up for three-pointers, guys like Harrison Barnes who do better when Steph Curry's on the court and Iguodala and all those guys, I don't think Lee was really that impacted by Curry. Lee can pretty much do his David Lee thing no matter who's running the offense, and he can actually generate offense in isolation. So when it comes to the good offense you reference, I just think that's the great way to use it as opposed to giving him 35 minutes.
Yeah, it is, especially it seems like in fourth quarters, there's no, I found this, maybe this is just the way things are now, because they want to cut down on potential turnovers. But like the Timberwolves are so bad at getting Kevin Love the ball in the post, and they're so unimaginative. In tight games.
This is an interesting issue, and I talked about this with Curry today, which is that the best offense you can get is fast offense. Pushing the pace helps your offense, but it just goes against instinct. It's not really in human nature in crunch time where the possessions matter and you're perhaps even maybe a bit nervous to then just run a fast break. And right. So that's where the Wolves run into problems, is they're such a better team when they're on the run, but it's not your natural inclination to be that way at the end of a game.
And teams just don't run plays, so they, instead of finding a creative way to get a David Lee post up or a Kevin Love post up, like they just do a straight post up where the guy ends up getting pushed out, you know, to 12 feet instead of 8 feet, and it slows down and ball stops. And I like, if there were more like, you know, curls, you know, like a curl screen that puts David Lee on the low block, or a cross screen, or just if there was just more execution instead of just these straight post ups, I think David Lee would be so much more valuable in a fourth quarter situation with a close game. But because they don't do that, and because his game is what it is, like, he's still very good on offense, but he's not the right fit on offense for them.
I would agree, and it's hard because we don't have the counterfactual. I can't see another coach run this team, but in a lot of people's imagination out here, a different coach would be doing so much more with this roster. I more tend towards the belief that it's just not that great an offensive roster, so I'm not that surprised with this result. But I certainly understand the other argument with it. And the interesting subplot to me is how somebody like Draymond Green, a second rounder who can't really even shoot that well, could supplant Lee in the rotation and has taken of late some of his minutes and had some interesting things to say in the last Warriors practice before this one.
Ooh, tell me.
It's just an intriguing situation. Well, he was asked straight up if he was brought in because David Lee was doing badly defensively, and he said, I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have all the quotes committed to memory, that David Lee can't really guard shooters and can't really guard wings. And then he followed it up with what sounded a bit, condescending with the, and that's fine, that's fine. You know what it sounded like? Have you seen The Descendants? Have you seen that movie?
No, I have not.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Beau Bridges' character would offer some menace or something that sounds like a tacit threat and then back it up with, but nobody wants to do that, you know? Nobody, it doesn't have to be that way. And it had that rhythm to it where there were David Lee compliments, but there was also a bit of, he's not doing what we need him to do. That was a quote, that he wasn't doing what we need him to do in pick and roll defense there, is what Draymond Green said. And the we was interesting because he's tight with Mark Jackson. It was interesting that he was using the we word, because when you think of the status difference between those two, Lee is making, and Green made reference to it, a big money guy. Lee's making so much money, and Draymond Green lives in Emeryville, probably in an apartment on, you know, a second rounder's contract. So it was interesting to me to see someone, a second rounder and a bench guy, kind of tweaking the starter. And it was after this odd dance of Lee before trying to kind of assert his role above the subs and above people who would replace him with this whole full squad thing. And how are we with our starters? Trying to indicate that
Draymond Green being the death of full squad could be the most interesting subplot of the playoffs.
I think that this could get juicy come postseason, because then you have Mark Jackson and we don't know what his job status is, and who is he going to trust? Green is his guy. They're thick as thieves, and Lee is depicted and thought to be Lacob's guy, but I'm not sure how strong that relationship is. And so Jackson has to look at the situation and really choose what is going to assure him the best chance of victory and which guy he trusts. And it's just so funny to me that it's between their first big free agent signing with the Lacob group versus this really marginal player who's played his way into the hearts of the fans with his rugged defense and his effort. And I just, it's an intriguing situation out here.
It is weird to me that Mark Jackson would be under so much scrutiny right away, and I wonder, I do wonder how much of that is his coaching and how much of that is the displeasure people had for him as an announcer.
Well, we've talked about this. It's that, and it's also the religious stuff. The religious stuff does not play here. It does not play well, especially when you have a scandal in conjunction with that, with the stripper scandal,
yeah.
Which for some reason, I don't get what we do as media where we never talk about that. Like, did we sign some sort of document that we're just never allowed to talk about that? It's a very interesting, juicy scandal.
Right.
But that perhaps put him in a poor light with fans, and you would be amazed if you looked at the Warriors World Forum and the Golden State of Mine. So many Warriors fans are on the fire Mark Jackson train, and I would say that this team is exactly at where realistic expectations should have been with them.
Yeah, I mean, most fans just want to fire coaches anyway.
It's action. And I disagree with a lot of the fan criticisms of Mark Jackson. There's this obsession out here with him not calling timeouts, and I'm fine with that.
I don't think people understand how expected a timeout is by the opposition and how not calling that can kind of screw them up.
Well, it's this fallacy of it's going to stop a run. I've heard fans say, why isn't he calling timeouts to stop the run? There's no evidence to indicate that a timeout stops the run. You just notice it sometimes when a timeout is called and a run stops, and you go, oh, well, that's why it happened. But that's a little like in The Simpsons where Lisa tells Homer Simpson that this rock keeps tigers away. Do you see any tigers here? That doesn't exactly prove that it stopped the run.
There is this coaching philosophy that you see a lot with the lower levels, and I would imagine like we've seen it at the upper levels. It's just not talked about in that way. But there is this idea of don't call a timeout when things are going so poorly for you, because it kind of gives your guys this attitude of, oh, well, we're just going to get bailed out anyway. Like, there's this idea of, okay, things are going poorly, figure it out. And if you're doing that constantly in the regular season, wouldn't that benefit you in the postseason? If you have 82 games of, oh crap, something's going wrong, we better figure it out, you know, on our own as players to get this thing righted. And then if you get to a situation like that in the postseason, you have 82 games of experience of that, I feel like that's a good thing. Now, there are times where it's just not going to work. It's not going to work out. It's not going to work out in the postseason because, you know, stuff happens. But I do really like that idea of don't just call a timeout because things are hard.
Well, I don't like coaches just doing things for the sake of providing the illusion that they're in control. And I like that he's not that guy. I do like that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that happens a lot in coaching, and that coaches make a lot of decisions to the detriment of their team, and they overcoach and they smother. So I'm in favor of that, but a lot of fans don't like that, and I'm with you that you should have your team figure it out. And I'd also say this. I would ask fans this. What is it that the coach can convey in a timeout that he can't convey during a free throw?
Right.
What is that thing? Maybe it's some sort of specific strategy, but if you're not really going to change up the strategy, and if whatever you would change it to is some stuff that everybody knows, and you go, hey, let's run a zone, you don't need to sit everybody down for that. So,
well, yeah, and you also have like these situations where they're constantly calling out coverages, and or at least good teams like are constantly calling out coverages, and this is what they're doing, and this is what we need to do, and I think the casual fan thinks that, oh, they call a timeout and then they draw up a play and that fixes stuff. You really don't see plays drawn up except for at end of game stuff, and usually it's stuff they already do.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a reaffirming of like, all right, this is where the ball is, this is the situation, here's where I want all of you guys on this play that we already know. Like, it's not like you don't get a lot of new stuff drawn up. And so I think it's just this thing of like, you can reaffirm what you want done without needing to call a timeout.
Yeah. I just think fans want action. They want it to be like the movies. They want it to be like TV where a fiery speech is given and it changes the course of everything. It doesn't often really happen like that at the professional level. The other interesting thing to me is how when you don't like a coach, as many fans out here are with Jackson, then a lot of what happens on the court becomes their decision if it's negative. Where, what is Mark Jackson doing? Why is he doing this? And I don't know if he's doing that. Maybe Steph Curry is doing that. Maybe Steph Curry is going, I want to get David Lee involved. Let's start tossing it down low for some David Lee post-ups. I don't know. It's really hard to know whose decision is what, and we just trend towards blaming the guy we don't like when we don't know.
Yeah, and there are a lot of assumptions, and there are a lot of assumptions just with sports in general, which I guess is fine. That's part of the fun of it, right? And I guess, I don't know, there is this like gladiator mentality of like the crowd gets to decide the fate of someone, and so maybe that's, I don't know, maybe it's trickled down over the last few thousand years, and we want to decide the fate of coaches and
thumbs down.
Yeah, like everyone just wants to everyone just wants to be Joaquin Phoenix and like kind of fake the thumbs up and then go thumbs down.
Yes, that's what people want. There's an element of truth to it, because I do think that while nobody out here in the media necessarily controls Jackson's fate or controls David Lee's fate, collectively you can build up an atmosphere that influences decision-making. I do think that is so. And Lee is in a funny place, getting it back to David Lee, where he doesn't have a whole lot of media allies. And it almost seems like bad luck that that's happened for him. Because he was very well liked in New York with the Knicks, you know, the media fell all over themselves complimenting Lee, which is unusual for the supposedly vicious New York media. And it's funny that out here with the cuddly Bay Area media, David Lee can't find a friend.
Well, he was the constant bright spot in just a hurricane.
Bright spot's an interesting way to put it.
Well, bright spot, white spot. I don't know, however you want to put it, but like he was the all star in a sea of crap.
Yes.
Right? Like he was the life preserver in this ocean of excrement that was there, because there was so much chaos, but it was like, oh well, this guy's still getting 20-10, like he's still really, you know, he's putting up numbers, like people like numbers.
He was a
poop buoy, and now like now it's looked at, you know, his numbers are probably less than what they were, or maybe they're about the same. I haven't really looked it up, but he's looked at as not a poop buoy, but the poop itself.
Yes,
he's looked at as an undercurrent of poop in this ocean, where the Warriors have this expectation and this potential to be amongst the elite, but now maybe because he doesn't play defense all that well, and because he, you know, maybe halts an offense that could be a lot better because of, you know, just his style of play. Well, now he's keeping them from being as great as they can be.
I just find it more interesting that you don't have the guy who's really pro David Lee out here in the media. And maybe he exists and I just don't know about him. But you definitely wouldn't define Tim Kawakami as that. You wouldn't define Marcus Thompson as that. You wouldn't. I can't really come up with anybody who's in David Lee's corner and is lashing out against the criticism. And you almost would expect that guy to exist, given that, as you pointed out, David Lee is pretty much David Lee, and his numbers are what they are. They haven't really – he hasn't really changed as a player.
Let me throw this at you.
Okay, throw it.
In over 100 minutes this year, this is the third most used lineup for the Warriors. It's Curry, Clay, Iguodala, Draymond Green, David Lee.
Yes.
They have a better defensive lineup. They have a better defensive rating than the starters, and they have a net rating of plus 35.4.
That doesn't shock me based on watching the team. That's with Iguodala and Draymond Green right at the same time, right?
Yeah. And David Lee is essentially the center.
When those two are combined, it's death. For opposing offense.
Why don't they do this more then? Why wouldn't you do this at the end of games?
I don't know, man. I mean,
maybe Andrew Bogut's the problem.
It's this great 1-2 punch of Iguodala's defense is more subtle and nuanced, and Draymond Green is more just mauling you, and it is a great 1-2 punch. I kind of want to right now, can you check the two-man lineup, Zach, of Draymond Green combined with Iguodala? I know that's what the people demand when they tune into this podcast.
And the starters, when you have Green out of there and Andrew Bogut in there, they're not that. I mean, they're on a measly plus 15.2. So still clearly not working.
Yeah, well, and it gets to how with the Warriors, it would seem that optimally one big is the best lineup for them offensively too, because that's a very good offensive lineup. Right? I mean, if you look at the numbers, whenever it's one big plus four guys who will shoot from 3-point range, whether it's Jermaine O'Neal plus four, whether it's Bogut plus four, whether it's David Lee plus four, the results are great. And again, it seems like it's a bit particular to how you have this unique weapon. Teams don't really know how to defend it because you have to bring up the center all the way up past the 3-point line to deal with Steph Curry off the screen and roll, and that just breaks defenses. Yeah. So it would seem that the Warriors should almost always play four out.
The two-man lineup of Iguodala and Draymond Green, they're plus 17.6 per 100 possessions with a defensive rating of 91.8.
Yeah, they kill all their teams. Yeah.
And the offense is stellar. I mean, the offense is 109.4.
Yeah, I don't think that the offense.
Maybe the answer isn't less Lee, it's just more Green.
That's very possible, and they're competing for the same minutes, and you could see a little bit of that friendly competition with the way Green was talking in the media. What was funny is I asked Green if he could play 35 minutes a game at that energy. I expected him to defer, given that he's just fielding these questions about Lee and, you know, Lee getting subbed out because he was screwing up on defense. And he said, oh, yeah, I could play 35 minutes.
I'm now against you on this anti-David Lee thing. I think Bogut's the problem.
Oh, that's an interesting hot take.
I'm just looking at this, and it's, you know, it's not a lot of data to go by, but they kill with Lee and Green out there, and Lee would give you that score. I guess if he can pass the ball like Andrew Bogut does, I mean, clearly the concern is protecting the rim, but I don't know that you always need a rim protector at the end of games.
You might not, and the Warriors certainly don't feel that way because they bench Bogut at the end of games in the way that the Clippers under Vinny Del Negro before Doc used to bench DeAndre Jordan. So that's an interesting perspective. That
it's weird to think like and problem is a relative term here because they're very good with both on the court.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just interesting that I like it better when they have a rim protector, but maybe they're that rare team that when you have Iguodala and Green, you have enough wing defense to not need a rim protector.
Perhaps. Yeah, and obviously they're not this good, but you know the Heat kind of went by that philosophy. A lot of perimeter defense, and it helps having LeBron James on the floor, but a lot of Heat, you know, a lot of wing defense, a lot of taking away the perimeter. And then, you know, Chris Bosh isn't a rim protector. I mean, he can block shots, but he's not a rim protector by any means. And they get by. And clearly they mix things up with Birdman out there and then Haslam out there and stuff. But I don't know. Maybe that's the new NBA.
I have a question for you, and maybe we can look at the league through this Warriors lens so other fans of other teams who are listening to this point can get some of that.
So they can tune back in.
They can tune back in. They can, you know, step away from the sandwich. They just fix themselves, and they can tune back in. It will be through a Warriors lens, though, which is that which teams should the Warriors want to play outside of Portland? Because everybody wants to play Portland. But how do you see these matchups breaking down in the West?
That's a good one.
I have my answer, so if I can buy you some time by answering this.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's anybody but Houston for the Warriors. That's a disaster for them. And it's funny right now.
I don't think they should play the Spurs.
I think that they shouldn't want to play the Spurs. Nobody should. But the Spurs aren't as scary to them as Houston is. Houston's a really bad matchup because we can talk about how Curry is death to opposing defenses on that high screen and roll. Houston's uniquely designed to deal with it because they can squeeze him with Pat Beverly and Dwight Howard, who is perhaps the best big man of getting all the way out there and getting back. So that's just a really bad combo for the Warriors, and it's also combined with how then you have Lee guarding people like Chandler Parsons. That's a disaster. So
yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing with the Spurs. Like, the Spurs are a better defensive team, and they're a slightly better offensive team, and they can shoot with, I mean, not that the Rockets can't, but the Spurs can really shoot with the, like, shoot accurately with the Warriors.
Yeah.
I don't see any upside to the Warriors playing the Spurs. So I would say I agree with you on the Rockets, and I would include the Spurs.
The upside to that is that Bogut gives Duncan problems. That's the upside. And you could also throw Iguodala at Tony Parker. So you could maybe quell the Spurs defensively a bit. But, yeah, I would definitely pick San Antonio in that series. They would be favored. Yeah. You would not want want to face them. What's funny is outside of Portland, the team the Warriors might want to play most is Oklahoma City, which sounds crazy because we're talking about a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But that would seem to be the case in this crazy Western Conference.
Yeah, I mean, they're not a good three-point shooting team, or they're not as good as they maybe need to be. But I still I don't think you want Curry having to deal with Westbrook for a seven-game series.
I don't think he's going to have to.
Who else would?
You just give it to Iguodala or Klay Thompson. The Warriors do their Hyde-Curry thing. I don't know ultimately which guys are going to be out there for the Thunder. It depends on health. I don't know if we're going to have Thabo, but then you would just kind of hide him on Thabo, which isn't my favorite way
to do it. Yeah, but when they throw, they're going to throw Reggie and Westbrook out there together, and that's a problem.
I don't think, you know, the Curry defense stuff is funny to me.
I don't know. It's not that he's a bad defender. It's that you're going to wear him out.
Well, I would go the not even that. I would say that he's foul prone. And so in order to not be an awful defender, he's handsy and he picks up fouls. So that would be my main concern with that.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, that's an issue. I just think that you almost need – you need a situation where you're getting a bunch of threes. Oklahoma City is a bad three-point defense, and so that would be the matchup for them that they would want. And that just shows you how hard the West is, because ultimately the matchup you want is a really scary matchup against the Thunder. So it's just crazy. This conference is too much.
And I think we're all hoping for Clippers, Warriors at some point.
That's the one. So that's how I'd rank it. I would rank it as the one you want is Portland, followed by OKC from a Warriors perspective, and then the Clippers, who might be the best team in the West. We don't really that they might be the best team in the West too. And then that's my power rankings of teams the Warriors should want, of the teams that are realistically that they could play: Portland, OKC, LAC, San Antonio,
Houston. Yeah.
Of the realistic possibilities. And the Clippers one, that's just interesting right now because the Clippers are great, but there's some stuff there. There's some vulnerabilities there. Chris Paul looks a little less explosive to me. I don't know what to make of
it. Yeah, we've been hearing about how, oh no, his knee, or oh, he's not that explosive, or he doesn't do anything anymore, and then he's just really great in the playoffs. What is the point of him being explosive right now?
I guess there's no point to it. It's just Andrew Hahn had a great article on it. It's funny. We thought that Doc Rivers would bring about a new defensive identity for the Clippers, and that would be their transformation. But instead, they're a better team with a totally different identity than we thought they would have, and that's that they're now Blake's team. They're kind of built around Blake Griffin, and that's the transformation that happened this year. They didn't get great at defense. They pushed the pace.
They're eighth in defense.
Yeah, but that's not great. I mean, that's not if you're talking about DeAndre Jordan as the next Kevin Garnett in the way Doc Rivers is, you wouldn't exactly expect eighth as a result, is all I'm saying.
Well, I think that's crazy to think he's Kevin Garnett to expect him to be Kevin Garnett.
Yeah,
they're not the same style of defender. They're not same position. They're not any of that. Just because KG played centered at times doesn't mean he was a center for. In terms of defensive identity, like they have completely different roles.
There's also the matter that DeAndre Jordan often looks like he has no idea what he's doing out there.
Right.
there's also that.
Right, but I don't know. People
do everything.
They talk about them being a bad defensive team. They're not bad.
They're just not great. All I'm saying is this: is that what's funny is that their identity became something different than we would have expected. And that they got scarier because of it, and they played a lot faster with Blake Griffin in mind, and that he is coming to the forefront and becoming, I mean, when you hear Clipper games advertised, I heard on the ESPN for the promo for the Nuggets Clippers game, it's Blake Griffin and the Clippers, and I don't think that we really thought about them in those terms a year or so ago. So I as much as I hate the stupid whose team is it conversation, there is some truth to it about.
No, there's not.
There's not.
No.
There's not.
No.
No.
They don't care whose team it is.
So you don't think that the
this
Clippers
is the thing
this, more,
this,
more Blake centric?
No, like this is the thing. They want to win. They don't care whose team it is. Like, I don't buy this Westbrook Durant. Whose team is it? LeBron Dwayne. Whose team is it? At a certain point, you just do whatever is best for you to win.
No, I would agree with the players don't really care about it, and we try to make a soap opera out of the egos involved.
Right, we're just looking for drama. I think this is the
no, I agree
dumbest
that.
Trope that we have.
Yeah, no, I don't think that Blake and Chris Paul are mad at each other because this is happening. I just think that there's truth to the idea that they're more built around what Blake does and his qualities than last year, where they were built around Chris Paul and the slow pace and him really being this just kind of dominating the offense.
Well, yeah, they had to micromanage. They had to micromanage against Vinny Del Negro.
I think there's some truth to that. There's definitely truth to that. I'm just saying that they're more built around the stuff that Blake does this season.
Yeah, he's one of the best players in the league.
So it's his team.
I guess so. I mean, that's something for the defense to figure out. Which player do you want to take away? That's the only time that matters. It's not. I hate the whose team is it? Like, that's such a dumb soap opera that we try to manufacture, and it rarely is a thing. It was a thing with Kobe and Shaq, but that's like a rare occurrence in the history of basketball.
Wade and LeBron, you know, remember that?
Oh my God!
LeBron, he went there to be a sidekick. Who the hell would think that, right?
Right,
now?
Like, and he bumped Eric Spoelstra. That was a week of my life I wish I could have back.
Oh man, people were so mad, and it really all focused on a conversation that now sounds ridiculous that a few years have passed, which is the idea that he was second in command to Dwayne Wade.
I want to go back and read every article of why these two will never win a championship together.
Yeah, that would be. There are a bunch of them out there. You know, there's that certainly exists, and expect more rhetoric like that to return should the Heat fail, and should they prove as vulnerable as they've looked these past few weeks, even though we know that they're not totally trying.
And they're starting Greg Oden now.
They're starting Greg Oden. They really just need LeBron's nose to heal, because I think that's been the main factor.
What's interesting is they haven't been good with Oden on the floor this year, but him with the starters, him with Chalmers, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, it's a very small sample size. It's like, I don't know, 27 or 30 minutes or something like that. But they have a defensive rating of 91.
It would be helpful if Oden didn't foul every possession.
Yeah, he fouls a lot, but that's also, like, he's still getting into NBA shape, right?
But he's always been a fouler, and I kind of, it seems like a lot has changed since when he played in the league, and that big men have more leeway and are afforded more contact and have verticality, and I'm kind of wondering, why can't Oden use verticality in the way that a lot of big men do? And
he's played 150 minutes in the last 4 years.
Always with the cape. Always with the cape.
It's not a cape. That's a factual. Like, you want him to come in and, I'm playing 2K. My guy's not injured anymore. He's back to being 100%. Like, that's just not – that's not life. Like, he's a fouler, but he's not – like, he's fouling at a much higher rate than he ever did before. And that might have to do with the fact that he hasn't played in 4 years.
I root for him every single play.
I don't think you do. I think you've always disliked him, and I think you want him gone.
Oh, that's so crazy. I root for him every single play. I get excited when he's in the game, just like everybody else. I just want him to stop fouling.
Yeah.
I'm interested in why he seems to be almost unique in his foulosity.
His fouls are up 150% from the last time he was playing in the league.
I mean, it's a bit confusing, because then I watch somebody like Andrew Bogut, where he's fouling people every possession and nobody's calling it.
Right. I mean, he's just been around. Like, there is that thing of, like, you've been around, you're a veteran, you do get some leeway.
You get to grab the – oh, man, that Bogut. The Bogut thing he does and that the Pacers do, where he grabs somebody's hand as they try to rotate defensively. I just don't even understand how the refs let that fly.
Do you think the new Clippers promotion for, like, when they're going to be on TV should be see who Blake's going to wrestle to the ground tonight?
Like, if the other team doesn't have a good guy to fight, we have an alligator that he wrestles.
Watch him box Hard out this ball. Alligator and wrestle him to the ground.
It'll wrestle an alligator in mud. I don't know. Yeah, that would be funny. I mean, we've talked about Blake and the Blake issues. I talked about this on the Clipper blog live. I have gone a million different directions with why people want to fight him. I have finally settled on, he grabs people as he falls down. and it's that simple.
He's a
it's
very
not
he's
jealousy,
a no,
it's
he's a
not
very
anything.
Physical player, and if we have found in the NBA, if guys wrap their arms around other guys' arms, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
That's just the case. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. Like, guys don't like having their arms wrapped up. Like, Luis Scola got into it with somebody the other night. Not into it, but, like, there was a play because he wrapped his arm around somebody and the other guy freaked out. And that happens in the NBA. Guys don't like to be held.
Maybe they just didn't like that his greasy hair was slicking over them, too. Maybe that was part of it.
Oh,
maybe that
you
was...
and your Argentinian xenophobia. And with that, we're going to end today's podcast. You can follow Ethan on Twitter at Sherwood's Trust. Ethan, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to be straw man so viciously. Thanks for having me, Zach.